Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And our play-by-play call of the day. It took 13 innings, but in the top of the 13th, the Colorado Rockies broke the logjam.
The pitch.
Base hit into center field by Tony Walters. Home comes Story. Par to third. The Rockies have regained the lead. 2-1 in the top of the 13th. Tony Walters with the biggest hit of his career. The Rockies have the lead.
Think about this. What happened within a span of about 36 hours at Wrigley Field? Two opposing teams celebrated on their field. The Brewers and then the Rockies. So Colorado gets the Brewers next. Dodgers get the Braves. American League gets Yankees and A's tonight. And then the winner gets the Red Sox Friday at Fenway, and the Astros and Indians play in the other half. And yes, former State College Spikes are all involved. Adam Ottavino came out of the pen, got the Rockies out of a jam last night. Luke Voit is going to start for the Yankees tonight, and not Greg Bird. And of course, Brock Holt has been important to the Red Sox this year. With that, we bring in Mark Wogenrich from the Allentown Morning Call. Mark, welcome back. It's always great to have you with us.
Great. Appreciate it. Thanks, Dave.
All right. You had a chance to talk with Matt Millen. What's interesting is he finally did get on a third list to go with Cedars-Sinai and the Mayo Clinic, and that was to get on Beth Israel Medical Center's list in Newark, New Jersey. But they also found he had abnormal lung pressure along the way, which I'm not surprised by that after talking to him and seeing how often he was coughing when he was talking to me about a month ago. When you talked to him, how was he?
It sounded really good. I mean, he is in the hospital. He did the Nebraska-Purdue game on Saturday. Said he felt fine, and Monday he was just going back to Israel for, like, you know, I guess the continuing evaluation for the heart transplant. And they did a hard cath and found that the lung pressure was high, and so they wanted to address that. So he's on some medication for that. And at the time, they also told him, we think it's probably in your best interest now to address, to get listed here for the transplant. So he is now, as I understand, he's going to be waiting there. He's planning on doing it there. It's just now a matter of time, you know, when the heart becomes available. I don't know all the logistics of being on how long you have to wait and at what level. I mean, there are levels of priority levels with regard to heart transplant patients and donors, so he said it could be a couple of days, could be 6 months. He really doesn't know. I think the main thing is if they get the lung pressure down, that he might be able to get released, because he would be within 4 hours of Newark, and you have to be living within 4 hours of the place where you're going to undergo the transplant. That was one of the issues. I guess it was one of the personal issues that he had with doing it someplace outside the area. Like the Mayo Clinic or Cedars-Sinai, just because he would have to relocate. He had wanted to do football the whole season, but now it sounds like he's going to be awaiting that. So while he's doing that, he can't do the football. He can't broadcast the Big Ten games. And one of the things he said was two things that bugged him the most were not being able to cover football, call football games, and not being able to get in his woodworking shop.
Well, in fact, you know, that's something easy. You know, you and I both know he loves to be in that shop, and we know how much he loves football.
I've always felt that, last week.
So. Yeah, right. I've always felt that if you have something you're passionate enough and you enjoy it, when you go through something like this, it's that kind of release that helps you get through it much easier. This is going to be much tougher, I think, for Matt, because he doesn't have not just one of them. He's not going to have either one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was going, they already sounded like he was going a little stir crazy. And I'm sure his wife Patty is going to be there. And he's got a couple of wrestling coaches from Lehigh Valley area were driving in. to visit him today. But yeah, for him, I think the mental side of that, therapy. I'm sure you watched the Big Ten Network story on it, but they really gave a visual to how he makes the how he makes that therapy, how he makes his, the things he makes, his building and his woodworking and his that sort of thing, how he turns that into like personal therapy. So that, I'm sure as positive an attitude as he has, and as realistic also as an attitude he has, that is going to be, just one of the little things that he's going to have to be able to work through while he's waiting and then to recovering.
Well, my point about him is simple. I'm sure he's a great and cooperative patient. But the fact that he's not doing anything.
I don't know that I'm sure about that.
Well, I think he's going to drive him nuts. How about that?
Exactly.
He's
right.
Going to drive the staff nuts because he can't do anything.
Cooperative, driving him nuts, right? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But what people should realize that where his heart capacity is right now, he's under the 1/3 level right now.
Yeah. And that means he just simply can't, he simply can't handle, real strenuous tasks for longer than, an hour or two, things like that. And he really gets winded real easily. And, one of the things what they were addressing with the heart transplant is that amyloidosis is, it's recurring. It's not curable. It's treatable. You go through chemotherapy, and it can reduce the amyloid levels in the organs. So, but it also means that it's not curable. So, it's going to recur. Now, by addressing the heart transplant, because that is the organ that the amyloidosis affected in him, a heart transplant then his new heart would still be susceptible to the amyloidosis. However, they could treat it, and so it would be. It wouldn't have the quick degeneration that it had when his amyloidosis went untreated or undiagnosed, and then by turn untreated over the last like 5 or 6 years.
He also made it very plain to you that Penn State, when it came to the conversation about elite, and I think you and I both know that conversation by James Franklin on Saturday, it was directed to recruits up there more than anything else. But Matt, as usual, is opinionated about that.
Yeah. All I had to do was say, "So, did you watch the game?" And and then 10 minutes later, he's telling me how for him, that kind of he doesn't really get into that sort of that the nature of that sort of discussion. That 30,000-foot program analysis. He was more looking at it from the fact that. For him, he thought Penn State played an order of magnitude better against Ohio State than against Appalachian State, which is the game that he did for Big Ten Network back in September. He even told me, he said, I thought the fourth, as everybody else I'm sure is diagnosing that or still diagnosing that, he thought the fourth and five call itself was good because it would have popped had Greg Schiano not called that defensive twist and had Chase Young not hit it, on fourth down and got inside to hit Miles Sanders. So even that, he thought it was a good call. It's just Greg made a better defensive call. And, that's kind of the way his mind works with those football things. But he was really impressed with the way the defense had played, well, at least through three quarters, especially in kind of handling a little bit of the way Ohio State ran. And he just said, I think this is a team that's proven how that it is, at least in that conversation with regard to great and elite, that sort of thing. And I guess if you look back, the last five games, Ohio State, Penn State games, four of them are decided by the number 10 points total, and one of them goes to overtime back in 2014, and then the last three, obviously. So yeah, that's kind of where he's getting at, is like these two teams are at least closer now, one than they were a couple of years ago, and then two than people might expect.
All right, now here's the next part. Let's move on to the game at the one that was played out on Saturday night. What were your thoughts on watching these two heavyweights go toe-to-toe in the center of a 100-yard ring?
I didn't consider it like that, but yeah, that's pretty much what it was. That is how I viewed it. I saw Penn State's defense, as I'm sure everybody suspects, played punched above its weight and for most of that game. I didn't expect them to be able to affect Ohio State's run game the way it kind of did, affect the pass game the way it did. I don't know the numbers necessarily, but I don't know how many actually throws downfield that Dwayne Haskins completed. I haven't gone back and actually looked at that, but it wasn't.
I can give you the numbers. Behind the line of scrimmage, Mark, behind the line of scrimmage, he was 12 of 14 passing. Beyond the line of scrimmage, he was 10 of 22. Is it 10 to 25? Okay. 10 to 25, 40%.
Yeah. And the big plays that they, when I saw that Haskins, no offense to him, I think he's got a great future, but when he was named the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week, I thought, that might have, if you're going to give it to somebody from Ohio State, that might have gone with their receivers, because those are the guys who actually just, they got the yards. They were just catching swing passes and screens and things like that, and then getting it over, and then finding lanes or breaking tackles or getting into space. Athletically, Penn State is probably still just on the broad frame of their roster, that 1-85 or even the 1-50 on the scholarship guys, probably another year or two behind Ohio State. It showed up maybe in the fourth quarter when those guys just got some lanes, got some free space, and took off. I think they're right there. They're really close. You have to be right there when you've got back-to-back 1-point losses and a 3-point win. Against, just a consistently top-tier program like Ohio State. They are at that point. They are right there. I think they're right on top of it. It just missed a couple of tackles there at the end, and he gave up, even before fourth down, he gave up the huge sack on first down that set you back, and that to me was just as big a play as fourth down.
Yeah, no question about it. I think where Penn State, what they need is a few more guys that can give you 10 to 15 plays in a game, keep your guys from playing 80 plays, but give you 10 to 15 plays in the game where during those 10 to 15 plays you don't have a drop-off. That's what I see.
Yeah. And it looked like Penn State was trying to develop that through the first month, which is the substitutions and how it wasn't just like inflection guys here and there. I mean, it was wholesale changes of 9 guys at a time, and whole defensive lines and whole second units, basically. And sometimes it kind of came back to bite them on certain situations. And I think, looking back on that, maybe that's kind of what they were going for in that month. Say, look, we got to develop this as much as we possibly can. And so when we get to Ohio State, when we get to Michigan State, when we get Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, that sort of that stretch, that we will have identified those players. And I think after after the Illinois game, or exactly which, or between the games, obviously before Ohio State, when James Franklin said that he hadn't developed that defensive 11 yet, and I guess you kind of saw that in a way come up against against Ohio State. I think their starters, the starting defense, played really well.
They did.
He said it, and it got into the fourth quarter, and he just you get heavy legged inside the last 4 minutes, and you can't chase somebody down, or you just lapse on a tackle, and that's the margin.
It's a game where home run hitters make a big difference. You talked about Benjamin Victor's play, home run play, KJ Hill, home run hitter kind of play.
Yeah.
How much did it hurt Penn State down the stretch not having a KJ Hamler?
That had to be a huge impact. I'm wondering whether, that last series, what they could have. Would they have gone to Hamler on that last series, though? Because, Pat Freiermuth had the big play on that very last series. Just knowing that he's there, though, knowing that there's a guy who, I've seen KJ make some tougher catches too, and that he can run a short route as well as he can run the deep route. I mean, the 95 yarder or the 93 yard play wasn't a bomb throw downfield. It was just a slant that he goes. Putting him out there, at least, maybe Ohio State's defense is going to have to keep at least an eye on him. Now, Penn State probably wouldn't be looking to go home run on that last series, but if you can get him loose, just spring him, that Trace isn't throwing downfield, but throws a high percentage ball that then KJ can take and go another 15, 20, 30 yards, whatever it is. that was a missing component that if they didn't, even if they didn't run that play, at least it was something Ohio State had to consider.
Or it opens up if for somebody else because they've drawn a little extra attention toward them.
Exactly, and that's how Trace was able to run. I think some of those just they gave him those gaps. They said, they were looking at KJ and looking at some of the receivers and that kind of stuff, and they left that middle open. They didn't kind of leave a linebacker to at least that often to look at Trace and keep an eye on him and just let him game those 10-15 yards that he pretty assertively took.
Mark, always a pleasure. Great to talk with you. Thanks for the update on Matt
Steve.
Millen
Absolutely.
As well. We appreciate
Anytime.
It a lot.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Mark Welgerich, Allentown Morning Call, one of the best. Penn State's fortunate to have a lot of great beat writers. Mark is absolutely in that category. We'll come back. Final half hour, Paul Meyerberg from USA Today on Great and Elite. We'll talk to him about that. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. All right. Final half hour, Paul Meyerberg of USA Today. We're going to talk about the great to elite. Look, in order to keep everything rolling at a high level, you got to keep recruiting at a high level all the time. And that's why when you talk about the number of recruits in there, some of which are considered among the best in the country that were at Beaver Stadium on Saturday night. You know, you're talking, when you're looking at and saying, talking about elite to great, you're not only challenging your own program, your own fan base, your own current players, you're also challenging guys to join your program and be a part of that, that you can be the ones that can, you know, take this, you know, and turn 1 point into a 1 point deficit into a 1 point win. I mean, that's what they're looking for. I think they're looking to so that they can put out on the field and match up in today's look. Sports performance tells you that you can keep your athletes at an optimum level over a certain number of plays in any game. If you can keep them at that optimum number of plays and not overstretch it, and in a game like this, and I talked about it last week, they're going to probably have to stretch their guys out further to win this game. And I said it last week, before any game that you go into. It's just obvious. You got to keep your ones out there as much as possible because they're that good, and your ones are, there's a reason why they're your ones. They're that good. They've tried different combinations with twos. Some, and in some areas, they're still too young. Okay? Some areas are just still too young. And in this game, boy, when you're over there and you're playing on offense, you know, there's certain series you want to put in, the Cam Sullivan Browns, things like that, but geez, you feel like you got to keep your guys out there. You want to maybe put a Ricky Slade in for a couple of series, but, you know, in a game of trust, you got to trust Miles Sanders in a game like this. You know, defensively, you want to be able to, you know, you've got three quality corners in Tariq Castro, Fields, Amani Oruwariye, and John Reed. So, look, you're going to have to play a lot of nickel out there and some dime. You know, and there was some dime where they put in Lamont Wade on Saturday night. You know, but it's in the trenches where, you know, really shows up more than anything else. They did give Daniel Joseph some run. They gave Shaka Toney a lot of run. When it came to the tackle spot, you know, Windsor and Givens really had to play a lot. And then, of course, Shelton got thrown out of the game. Yeah. So, you know, now you're stretching everybody out, probably playing idealistically, maybe for each of them, maybe 10 more plays. I mean, everybody's their own maximum. But maybe 10 more plays where they're still at that effective, the absolute effective high level instead of maybe a half step down. And that's where the depth comes in, where you're pulling out your starters, your really good athletes, your really good players, and you're putting other people in who, by the way, are also really good athletes. And also, at the same time, have enough instinct to be good football players out there. Not every athlete that you put out there, not every athlete you put out there is a great football player, but they can compensate with their athleticism. They're not all there yet. So that's where you're trying to close the gap. And that's not much of a gap, boys and girls. That is a very, that is that last little sliver, that last inch you're trying to get over. Now, it's interesting how Georgia is considered elite. Georgia's kind of been in that area for a long time. Last year, they got to the college football playoff. And believe me, they don't, I mean, they're this close getting blown out last year, the semifinal at the Rose Bowl. And then, to their credit, had the guts to come back and win in overtime.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Next one-game playoff is tonight. It'll be the Yankees and the A's on TBS. Luis Severino goes tonight for the Yankees. And the A's go with an opener. Yes, they'll start the game with one of their bullpen guys, Liam Hendricks. Okay. They won 97 games this year. The Yankees won 100. I mean, pretty close. You know, Chris Davis, big year. He hit 247, but he hit 48 home runs. Max Chapman, he led them in batting average at 278. I mean, that's your leader? I mean, at least Andujar at 297. But, you know, again, this is the era of analytics. I guess Howard Eskin went off on analytics the other day. I mean, he just went off on it. He says, everything's got to be a home run or a strikeout. He says, you can't hit a ball to the right and have a guy score. He says, doesn't that count? Oh, goodness gracious. You're going to have this fight for a long time between those who deeply believe in analytics and then those who don't. You know, like I said earlier, the conversation we had with Cindy yesterday about going for two, and I rolled that back toward analytics because that is the name of the game in analytics, point value, in this case, run value. All right, let's bring in Paul Meyerberg, USA Today. Paul, welcome. Sorry to bore you with all that conversation. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I actually found that really interesting. I really did. I could have sat here for another 2 minutes. Like, when we got to, like, I was waiting for some real esoteric stats so you could rebound with some with a little tidbit at the end. I found that to be a great time. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate that. All right, James Franklin after the game was talking about the fine line between great and elite. When you listened to that, what were some of the thoughts that you had?
Yeah, I thought that message that he delivered got a little bit lost. And I think it's almost understandable. We live in a different era now in how we digest things. I think people saw that video on Twitter or elsewhere and focused on the delivery or focused on certain parts of that message. But I really honed in on that because I thought he was right. Penn State, to me, if you're just being objective, just the basic facts of this thing, and that is back-to-back New Year's Six with a Big Ten title, played Ohio State the last three times, decided by 5 points, the last two losses by 1 point. And in my opinion, being there on Saturday, certainly they should have won both games. I think Penn State is very, very close, and we're talking inches away, just as a hyperbole, from joining that elite group of teams in college football. So I do think Franklin was right on the mark in that regard, and especially when he said this. Penn State right now is a great program, and they are, and Ohio State is an elite one, and you begin to see when these two teams meet just how little and just how, like, that fine line, that just hair that separates great programs from elite ones. And I thought Franklin was right on the nose. I'm surprised that he was able to grasp it at that time, just based on how the game ended, and obviously with his defensiveness to a degree based on that play call. But I thought he nailed it, and I agree with him wholeheartedly.
Yeah, in fact, he talked about that with Jack Ham and me in the postgame radio network after the game about that. He actually brought that up as the first time was with us. Then he went into the media room, and there's an old expression that hasn't been brought out obviously in recent years called Clemsoning. Is that about where Penn State is right now, where they're that close? Because Dabo Swinney used to really get under his skin to hear the word Clemsoning.
Oh, yeah. I've been at press conferences back in the early 2000s when we would talk about Clemsoning, and he was not a fan. I think the difference is I don't see Penn State losing games the way Clemson lost games at that time.
Right.
Clearly, on Saturday, that was heartbreaking if you're a Penn State fan. I saw those fans leaving Beaver Stadium afterwards. Clearly, it was less disappointment and more anger. And I think that does speak about the heightened expectations around that part. They're a lot like Clemson in the way that Clemson needed a big win to break through. And they didn't get it in that Orange Bowl where they gave up 70. LSU the following year was a step forward, but LSU hasn't really been that sort of team since the late 2000s.
Right.
It was beating Ohio State in that Orange Bowl, early 2013, I believe, that changed Clemson's trajectory. And I don't see Penn State having had that win yet. Washington was great, but it's Washington. I think Penn State needs that win to kick in the door and join that club of teams that can at least play for and at least win the national championship.
Based on what I read, you mentioned Washington, Wisconsin in that grouping as well. Two teams that Penn State beat the last time out. So they're almost in that area between Washington, Auburn, and Wisconsin, and then the group with Alabama leading up. They're almost in that in-between area right now?
Yeah, I do think so. And it's weird to say because, as you guys know, I mean, Auburn has won a national title in the not-too-distant past. They played for another. But I just think if we look at things in like a three-year window, of those teams that I mentioned, and I might have missed out on a team or a few, but those were the ones that popped in my head.
Right.
I think Penn State's the closest. But I will say, as you guys know as well, being around Penn State and knowing what it means to win a national championship or what it takes, there's a big difference in my mind between joining the elite of college football, which is Oklahoma, Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, whomever, and then winning a title. So once you join that group, it's another big step forward. So Penn State, while being close to being the team that every year you say they can win the national title, there's still a lot to prove. But I think they're getting there, and clearly they're getting there just based off the results and the performance that you see against some of the, like you said, beating a Wisconsin, beating a Washington, that speaks for itself.
You sat there and you watched the third consecutive heavyweight fight in the center of the ring between Ohio State and Penn State. Penn State won the first one, Ohio State by 1.1 each of the last two. When you watch those two teams play each other, what are you seeing? And I don't mean just in terms of great and elite, but what are you seeing in terms of the level of athleticism, the level of play when they go at each other?
You know, I hope it doesn't come off as disrespectful to Penn State, because obviously this is a heck of a football team. But I saw the difference on Saturday night, as you guys did probably as well. It's when Victor catches a ball that he shouldn't have caught and breaks three tackles and outruns people. And that's the difference between Ohio State and a ton of other teams. But you really see it on display when they're matched against a team that will match Ohio State's energy level, seems more motivated, seems just as well coached, has just as good individual players. I thought McSorley was the best player on the field on Saturday night. But the difference is Ohio State has guys who will break your heart. And if you look at Penn State's skilled players right now, they're all really talented. Johnson, Sanders, all those guys can play. But they don't have a guy who will break your heart. And that's a big difference in the talent level. It means that Ohio State's got a bunch of 10s and Penn State's got a bunch of 9s. 9s will beat almost everybody, except when you play a 10. So I do think there's a little bit of danger missing from Ohio State at the skill positions, from Penn State at the skill positions, you know. And I thought that was on display, certainly in the second half in Ohio State's screen game.
Paul, could that be, like, for example, a guy like K.J. Hamler, who then left the game? Did that take away one of those guys you're talking about?
Yeah, I thought so. And Hamler's a guy that you hear about, certainly from my perspective, you hear about during the week as a guy who is set to pop, and he did on Saturday. Those are the kind of guys and the kind of plays that separate teams. You know, and when Penn State had that and the place lifted up off its foundation, you know, 2 feet, Beaver Stadium, that was a moment. You know, that was a moment. And I thought that they could have built off that and really put their foot down. But, yeah, you're right. There are guys on the team who will hurt you. There just aren't six or seven. I think Ohio State, as a program, has six or seven guys either in the defensive backfield or the offensive backfield or out wide who can really hurt you.
Obviously, Georgia made the national championship game last year and had a great comeback because they were in the Rose Bowl. They were on the verge of being knocked out themselves. What, in your opinion, puts them in the elite group? Because they've always been the near-miss group until last year.
Yeah, they have been. You know, I just, being around that program last year and obviously seeing their performance, and I don't even think they played that well this year. I mean, they're good. They can be a lot better than they played this year.
Right.
I just see a different sort of mentality from Georgia. And to draw a parallel, I think when you see that level of competition and that level of drive from a program, it's really only mirrored at a few places. I think Ohio State's one, Alabama's another, Penn State to a degree is another. But I think Georgia's in a different headspace. They've always recruited well. I think Kirby Smart's greatest gift that he's done is turn that place into a battlefield. And those guys fight and fight and fight Sunday to Friday. And when they get out on the field on Saturday, they're a lot like Alabama, where they don't get swayed, they don't get pushed around. And eventually, as you saw against Tennessee, if you don't have a bunch of 10s against their 10s, they're just going to wear you down.
Obviously, the college football playoff is 4. It's not 8. And I'll be honest with you, Paul. I think 4 is the right number. That's just my opinion. At least maybe in the next couple of years, I'll change my mind about that. But what does having just 4 mean to games like Saturday night and mean to the regular season of college football, in your opinion?
Yeah, I do agree with you on the 4 versus 8. I do think 4 is good. I think the difference is it's a good difference in my mind, in that a Penn State in the past, you lose to Ohio State on September 29th, whatever day it was, and your season's essentially over because you're not going to leapfrog Ohio State in the standings. Ohio State's not going to lose twice, and you're not going to run the table in reverse. So I think in the past, it's basically just you're getting executed. You're done for the year, and you're playing for whatever the fiesta. I think now in the 14th playoff, Penn State's not done, by a long shot. You know, we've seen Alabama get in at 11-1. I know Penn State doesn't have that credibility on a national scale, but if the year ends and they destroy everybody else, Michigan, Michigan State, Wisconsin, and all that's on their record is a 1-point loss at home, and the committee will say, well, they should have won, they could have won, we think they would have won if things had gone their way, one bounce here, one bounce there, and Ohio State runs the table, Penn State's right there. I mean, they're right there. So the season's not over for Penn State. I think that's the really good bonus for those teams that aren't going to steamroll everyone, will take one step back during the year, but can still play for a national title. So I think that's a real benefit for Penn State.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, because I thought it was an excellent point, and I made this point on the show Monday, and that's about the anger factor. When Penn State played Ohio State here 4 years ago, the game went double overtime. And, of course, you know, Penn State was trying to come back from everything that had happened. So the feeling was, wow, okay, really fought that one to the end. As you mentioned, coaches were angry, players were angry, the fans left angry. Does that then feed into what you're talking about where Penn State is?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I really do think that. I think as a program, there has to be a point, like Franklin says, where you say enough and no more. And there's no more moral victories. And I think Penn State as a program, all off season, I went there in August to talk about McSorley and talk about the program. Every guy I talked to, Farmer, McSorley, Franklin, Ronnie, all these guys, I got the impression from them that they were tired of hearing about it and tired of hearing about the line of Penn State's going to be pretty good, but, and the but is they don't have Barkley. The but is they can't beat Ohio State. The but is they can't beat Michigan State. They got tired of the but. So if they weren't tired of it already, as I picked up in August, all they got to do is look at that tape on Saturday, point to the 7 or 8 times or 4 or 5 times, whatever, the moments that dictated why you lost by a point, and get angry about it. And they don't need to be angry to beat Rutgers or Illinois or the bunch of those bottom feeders. But if you play angry against the Michigan State or Wisconsin or Michigan, you remember that it was the little details that cost you Ohio State. That's a huge step forward for the program. You know, and I thought Franklin after the game, I like James a lot. I think he's a fantastic football coach. He gets no credit for what he's done.
Right.
I thought you saw defensiveness, and I think he needs to be better than that. Because certainly with that, with the fan heading out of the stadium, he needs to be better than that. I think defensiveness is different than anger, and I want to see Penn State angry because I think that can be powerful for them the next 2 months.
It is powerful. There's no question about that. You've now had a chance to watch enough of Trace McSorley in person. What do you think of him?
I think that he's a college football player, and I mean that in like the most best respect.
You mean that as an absolute compliment, yeah.
Absolutely. Not in the sense that he's not an NFL player. I just look at Trace McSorley, and I see a guy who doesn't want to lose, will do whatever it takes to win. We have a problem in how we evaluate college players as media people or as fans. We always hold them against the prism of how they'll do on the next level. I think Trace will have his shot at the NFL. You know that guys who are 6 foot, 6'1" can play. But instead of that, focus on what he does in college. On Saturday night against Ohio State at home in a whiteout, he set a program record for total offense. And no one's talking about it. You know, and they're basically saying, well, he's not going to win the Heisman anymore. On Saturday night, he set a Penn State record for total offense against Ohio State. So I don't get the hate for it, or even rather the lack of love for McSorley. I think he's awesome. He's in my Heisman top three right now. I think he'll be there in December. I think he's fantastic in the pantheon of players at that position in Penn State history, easily, if not at the top.
Paul, after that heavyweight bout on Saturday night, let's go to this weekend. What? Give me a couple of games this weekend that catch your interest that you think are important that we should also think are important.
Yeah, I think the number one game for me is the Red River. That's OU, yeah. Texas. Yeah. That game is always, and I was there when Charlie Strong actually beat OU with a bad team. It didn't make any sense. I think Texas has kind of turned a corner to a bit because I think they're understanding what it takes to win, just like Penn State did 2 years ago. I think under Herman, they're starting to get it. It's starting to click. So I think that's a really important game. Obviously, the loser is out. If you're Texas, you're not going anywhere. With two losses for OU, you're between a rock and a hard place at 5-1. So that's the game. I think LSU at Florida. Florida really impressed me, guys, against Mississippi State. I did not think they were going to win on the road.
Right.
So that's another one. Later in the day, if you look at night, I think Washington and UCLA, I like to see Washington go and destroy UCLA, win at the Rose Bowl, which they haven't done in ages. I know UCLA's down. They seem close to a breakthrough. It's not a great weekend, guys. I see individual games that kind of speak to me because, you know, we'll watch anything.
Yeah, no, exactly. You and I are the same way. I'll pick out some games because I've got the chance to watch a few coming up this weekend. And again, Oklahoma, Texas is one I'll watch. I thought Texas beating TCU was the kind of step they needed to make, and I think that helped Texas.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it was the kind of game where when it was 16-10 and TCU had possession, you kind of saw things falling apart to
yes.
me. And it was a moment where you thought, okay, here's Texas against Maryland. Here's Texas the last 10 years, or last 5 years, rather. So for them to come back in that game, to carry that forward, to beat an SC, to beat Kansas State in that kind of ugly game that they always seem to lose against Bill Snyder, that's a step forward for me. They're not ready to win a national title or even win a Big 12, but unless you're a hater, I think you've got to see the progress that Tom Herman's made with the Longhorns.
Paul, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for the time, the perspective. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Talk again soon.
Paul Weiberg of USA Today. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, great to have you with us. Obviously, fun show today, informative show today, as a matter of fact. And we enjoy bringing it to you and hope you'll enjoy it as much as we did. Thanks to Paul Meyerberg of USA Today, Mark Wogenrich for joining us from the Allentown Morning Call, and, of course, R.J. Anderson from CBS Sports. Tomorrow, Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, and tomorrow we'll also have our high school roundtable, Sealands Grove with Zach Showers. Lewisburg's going to be playing Shikellamy, and that's going to be a Christie, and it's going to be homecoming for Lewisburg. Greg Wetzel will join us tomorrow, and the coach, Dick Hort, will join us. Tomorrow, the play-by-play guy would join us, but we're just not important enough. Yeah. Important enough to be on Sirius XM, but not important. You know. Oh, well. Okay. So we're not important enough. Yeah, how do you feel about that, Sean? You bailed him out yesterday.
I know, I did. Well, something to work on when we get back here tomorrow. Oh, wait, he won't be here tomorrow. Well, I guess we'll work on it next week, if he can make time for us.
I mean, he's trying to make this huge, huge deal. I mean, which in the end, I believe, lines his pockets. And believe me, based on what we've seen in sales lately, the pockets are wide open. I mean, Jamie and the others, I mean, my goodness. I mean, they wake up every single day, you know, and it's like big shoulders.
Well, that's the first thing he says when he walks into the office and opens up the doors and, you know, hangs a right, walks past Sammy's desk, and, hey, I'm here again today for the cash.
Why, is there a robbery going on? It's certainly not flowing in that direction. I mean, thank goodness for Jamie and all the others. I mean, really. Oh, my goodness. Then suit lights coming back for Danville homecoming. I mean, do the authorities know?
That'll be the first thing they ask as he goes through the gates. Where's Dad? Where's Dad?
Yeah, I know how much the fans loved having him sit in the stands when he was on sabbatical that one year.
So if your dad was here tonight, we'd have him a minimum of 4 sections away from the band.
Do we have club seats?
New turf at Danville. Don't know if they added club seats.
Oh, my goodness. Now, does everybody around there have turf? Or who has, like, the Sealands Grove, do they have turf?
Sealands Grove has brand new turf.
Okay.
Danville has turf.
Okay.
Shikellamy, grass, old school.
Grass, okay.
Central,
obviously,
Central Columbia.
Christie's turf.
Christie turf, Central Columbia turf.
Okay. Milton?
I believe Milton is old school. Grass?
Grass. Mifflinburg?
Good question. I can't remember with Mifflinburg. They're off the schedule, Sealands Grove, this year. I thought they were grass.
How about Midwest?
Midwest, they're playing their games at West Snyder on the soccer field. Oh, okay. I believe that is grass.
Okay.
Midwest, first ever home victory last week in overtime.
Congratulations.
Homecoming win for Midwest last week. That was a wonderful win.
Oh, that's great news. You know, brand new program like that. Marty Tobias has a good program at Penns Valley, too.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.